Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, and producing back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk, who's going to be working on our show this year. Taylor, how you doing?
Excellent. How you doing, Buster? Good to be here.
We were actually going to have a podcast later in the week, but after the Mookie Betts news broke, we scrambled. We're putting one together today. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirkchin. We're going to be talking with Paul Imbecides. But first, before we get to all of that, and before I ask you about the Mookie Betts trade and how you felt about it, we got to establish you on the podcast. Growing up as a kid, what was your favorite team and who was your favorite player?
Baltimore Orioles, Hon. Astros and Natty Bows. It's sad. So sad. But favorite player, I mean, obviously Cal Ripken, he's the GOAT. But yeah. I love those teams. I love Brady Anderson and Rafi Palmeiro, B.J. Surhoff. My favorite contemporary Oriole, probably my favorite of all time, is Nick Markakis. Just a solid dude, great beard. I love the guy. Broke my heart when he broke his thumb in the 2012 playoffs because he'd been dying for the Orioles to just get there and he couldn't play. So thankfully he got that division title and got to play in the 2014 ALCS and CS. But it's lean times for Orioles fans these days. So I don't keep up as much as I should, but I believe, working on the show, I will probably be much more in the know.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know this, but I actually cover those Oriole teams that you referenced with B.J. Surhoff and with, Roberto Alomar and Brady Anderson, obviously, with Cal Ripken on those teams. Did you go to Camden Yards, 1995, 1996, in that range?
Oh, yeah. I was there a whole bunch. That's kind of... as a family, we would always go to Camden Yards. We'd watch the games on TV. That was kind of my first sport love. They were good then, but we were really into rally caps then. So, we were there at the same time and didn't even know. That's kind of funny.
And every night that place was packed. Every single day that ballpark was packed. It's actually hard. I'm sure it is for you. It is for me to watch games there now and to see all the empty seats. Cause man, that place was awesome. All right. What'd you think of the Mookie Betts trade? Just at the surface level. I do think, by the way, as we move forward, there are going to be other parts of this trade that come out. I don't think what we've seen is the final version yet.
I think this podcast today, you can explain it a little more, but I just don't get why. It's so perplexing to me to move an MVP guy. I will say though that my favorite part is all the sad Red Sox fans. Katie Nolan here at ESPN, her sad tweets, they bring me so much joy. And if I'm looking at the teams I really don't like, it's Yankees, Red Sox, but Red Sox over Yankees just because of the arrogance of the last two decades. It's insufferable.
Yeah, well, Tim Kirkchin will definitely have some perspective on the deal. And I'll try to give you an explanation. I don't know if you're going to buy it about why the Red Sox made this deal. Some news and notes as we get into it. The Astros the other day named James Click as their new general manager. He'd been part of the Rays organization since 2006. They, of course, introduced Dusty Baker as their new manager recently. Last night, the news broke that they've agreed, the Red Sox and Dodgers have agreed to this deal. Mookie Betts and David Price to the Dodgers as part of a three-team deal. There's going to be cash going from the Red Sox to the Dodgers to offset the $96 million that David Price is owed in the last 3 years of his deal. The Red Sox get Alex Verdugo. The Twins get Kenta Maeda from the Dodgers. The Red Sox also get a pitching prospect from Minnesota. As I say, as we begin this podcast, I've heard that there are other smaller elements to this deal. According to Caesars, the Dodgers World Series odds in the aftermath of this deal went from 7-1 to 4-1. The Red Sox win total over under went from 87.5 down to 86.5. Jeff Passan reported last night that the Dodgers also are going to trade outfielder Jock Peterson to the Angels. There'll be some other parts of this trade, including Ross Stripling going to the Angels. We prepared a piece for SportsCenter on what Mookie Betts would mean to the Dodgers. Give a listen.
Gibson swings and a fly ball to deep right field. This is going to be a home run. I don't believe what I just saw.
Dodger fans revere Kirk Gibson for a seminal home run 32 years ago. The Dodgers players, however, are kind of sick of Gibson. It's not personal, it's business. They're tired of the reruns in Dodger Stadium of Gibson's home run. the daily reminder that it's been so long since the team's last championship. Now, as Clayton Kershaw, Justin Turner, Cody Bellinger, and their teammates try to push a championship rock up a hill, they're getting rolled in the 2017 and 2018 World Series and being stunned by the Nationals last fall. They have added Mookie Betts, widely regarded as one of the top five players in the big leagues. Placed atop the Dodgers' already stacked lineup, LA's powerful offense could be even better. Betts, followed by Max Muncy, and Turner, and Bellinger. The outfield defense behind the Dodgers staff will be incredible. With Bellinger and Betts in center and right field, both finished in the top five in defensive runs saved in 2019. The Dodgers have won seven straight National League West titles, coming oh so close to a championship. They tried Yu Darvish and Manny Machado and other stars. Maybe Mookie Betts will be the guy who pushes Kirk Gibson aside, with all due respect. Before we begin to talk about this major trade, I want to tell you about the Hoop Collective podcast, hosted by Brian Windhorst. It's also NBA trade deadline week, so if you can't get enough of the winter hot stove, I suggest you check out the Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcast.
Seam heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirchen, of course, covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, let's break down this Mookie Betts trade. As I said at the top of the podcast, I don't think we know all of the elements that might be involved. There might be a player to be named later. There could be some international signing money. But with the main parts are in place, and the important parts are Mookie Betts, David Price going to the Dodgers. From the Dodgers' perspective, what do you think of this deal? I just, as a kid who grew up liking the idea of Batman with hanging out with Superman, I love the idea of Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger in the same outfield for the Dodgers. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think it'll be more fun to watch defensively with those two guys. Well, just as much fun as it will be to watch them hit in the same lineup. It's going to be breathtaking either way. And the Dodgers just went from a really good team to a great team. They were going to win the division anyway, Buster, if they hadn't made a deal. But that's obviously not good enough for the Dodgers when you haven't won since 1988. So we've been waiting for Andrew Friedman to make an enormous trade that's going to cost some money. And I think all Dodger fans will say it was worth the wait because it was a blockbuster that's going to make them a devastating offensive team. If David Price is healthy, he fills an enormous hole as their three starter on the Dodgers. And it just gives them a defensive presence also. And they didn't have to trade really any of their top prospects. And they have all this flexibility now in payroll where they can pay Mookie Betts long-term if that's the way it works out.
And I got to tell you that, you know, just trying to put myself in the shoes of how the Dodger players feel, I think making a deal like this really helps them emotionally for 2020 because you think about where they were. And I think you'll agree with me, you know, they lose the 2017 World Series, the Astros, and they come back in 2018 and they push the rock back up the hill again. They make it to the World Series again and they get blown out by the Red Sox. And then they go back to spring training in 2019. I got the sense, I think you did too, that the players were reinvested. They changed the clubhouse. They moved Yasiel Puig. Guys put in a lot of work. They pushed the rock all the way back up the hill. And I think the players assume that, you know what, we got a good chance to win the World Series this year. And they're eliminated by the Nationals. And so going into spring training, it felt like, you know what, they need something to sort of energize this group, especially in the aftermath of learning the news about the Astros and the sign stealing and, you know, maybe the Red Sox in 2018 as well. And this is exactly the sort of move, I think, that will energize the players to go into the process of trying to get the rock back up the hill. What do you think?
Yeah, I sensed anger last spring, Buster, about losing 2 years in a row, and that is not going to happen this spring. That's what I sensed in spring training 2019. It will be different this year. It will be now we've got every conceivable piece that we need to win the World Series. Now this is entirely on us. And granted, some pressure comes along with that, but I'll take the pressure any day when I've got Mookie Betts hitting leadoff playing right field every day. I fortified my pitching, and there is nothing that we're missing at this point. So they are the clear team to beat in the National League right now. And it's just one of those deals when you pick up a top five player in the game, maybe only Mike Trout's been better than Mookie Betts over the last 5 years, and he's 27, and he's got a lot to play for with a contract coming up. This is the perfect scenario for the Dodgers.
Okay, let's look at it from the Red Sox perspective. Look, I feel like that the Red Sox ownership has made its share of mistakes in the last couple of years. I don't understand. I mean, you can go back even to the point where they fire Ben Cherington after he builds this great farm system. They bring in Dave Dombrowski, who took a, you know, win now mentality. They win the World Series in 2018. Then ownership veers back and forth in terms of what they want. You know, they had the highest payroll in baseball in 2018. Last spring, they made what I felt like was a serious mistake in signing Chris Sale. They get overextended. And that sort of sets up the context for what they were dealing with Mookie Betts, which is they wanted to sign him. From what I understand from sources, and this has been out there in other places, they offered him $300 million. Mookie said no, which is absolutely his right. From talking with friends of Mookie, he really understands how important he is to the union as one of its premier players. He was devoted to the idea of getting to free agency after the 2020 season. So he turned down the Red Sox offer, leaving Boston's front office with a decision. Do we keep Mookie Betts going into the 2020 season, knowing that potentially he could just walk away for close to nothing at the end of the year other than draft pick compensation? Or do we trade him, whether it was before the start of the season or in July? And I understand why they would want to get this off the board in the offseason rather than wait till the season played out, Tim, because in July, that would have been a much more complicated decision. I don't think they would have gotten, you know, that much more, if perhaps even less than what they got in this deal now. Red Sox fans clearly unhappy about this deal. I have a hard time going at the Red Sox ownership, though, with pitchforks, given the fact that in the past, they've shown a willingness to spend money. You know, they've been out there paying high salaries to players, and they really felt like, you know what, we're not going to be able to sign Mookie, so now is the time we move him. How did you feel about it?
Oh, I'm with you on almost all of this. Look, if I'm a Red Sox fan, I'm furious today because they let a generational player potentially get away from them when they had enough money potentially to re-sign him. But it also was pretty clear, Buster, as you said, he was going to free agency for a variety of reasons. And if the Red Sox decided and saw that $300 million and $420 million is too big of a gap, and we understand that, then they had to do what they did. And they have to do it sooner rather than later to get any sort of return, because if they wait till the end of July, it's just not going to be the same. So it was not a good day for the Red Sox. They didn't get enough in return. All of that is true, but they didn't have much of a choice if they determined he's not coming back with us. He's not right. going to sign. This is better than a draft choice at the end of the season.
There have been a lot of comparisons with the Mookie Betts trade with when the Red Sox traded Babe Ruth to the Yankees. Are you on board with that?
Well, it's a little hard. Only it was a sale to the Yankees, and Babe Ruth was the best left-handed pitcher in the American League at the time and ended up becoming statistically the greatest hitter of all time. I'm not going as big as Babe Ruth. Okay. That's too big. That's statistically the greatest player of all time. So I'm not going there, but there are similarities with a young, great player who grew up in an organization and now he gets traded for financial reasons. It just doesn't sit well, especially when the Red Sox have more money than the Red Sox had back then.
Yeah, and I'd say this, too, that anybody who listened to this podcast in recent years knows I've said repeatedly what the Red Sox were doing under Dave Dombrowski, trading prospects for stars, you know, taking on guys like David Price with a record-setting contract. there was a credit card bill that was going to come due at some point, and there were some really difficult choices, to the point that after Dombrowski got fired by the Red Sox in September, I had some really, really high-ranking executives who would be the type of people the Red Sox probably would have loved to hire to head of baseball ops tell me privately, I will never go and work for that team now, because the challenges are just going to be so great, because whoever replaces Dave Dombrowski has to be the person who trades Mookie Betts and cuts payroll and rebuilds the farm system. At some point, this was going to have to happen. And I actually feel like that, you know what, in 2021, 2022, the Red Sox are going to be in a better position to contend than they are before they make this trade. What do you think?
Yeah, I had someone with the Red Sox tell me a couple of years ago, he said, really, really worried about 2020, where this team could be at that point. And I scoffed. I said, come on, they'll find a way. They have all the money in the world. They're not going to let Mookie Betts get away. They're going to re-sign all these guys. They have the money to do it. And this guy was absolutely right. They're in trouble right now. Trouble meaning they're not going to be able to compete with the Yankees with the team they have right now without Mookie Betts. But when you look back, Buster, you're right. The mistakes they made were giving all that money to Chris Sale, all that money to Eovaldi. Maybe they should have been a little bit more broad-minded and think every penny's got to go to Mookie Betts. We got to keep him before we have to keep any pitcher. And maybe that's the biggest mistake they made, is giving up so much money to pitchers who maybe were on the verge at some point of breaking down.
All right, let's also look at this deal from the perspective of the Minnesota Twins. They get Kenta Maeda in this Dream Team deal from the Dodgers. Their offense is going to be phenomenal this year. I don't think there's any question about it. And I feel like with some of the moves they've made, you know what, their pitching will be good enough to back up that offense. What do you think?
Yeah, and Kenta Maeda, look, he's not a star pitcher, and I'm not sure that's enough to give up the Gratterall kid who throws, has got a tremendous power arm and has a chance someday to be really good. But they're trying to win right now, and Maeda is a very valuable guy because he can pitch in relief, but he can start, and they needed another starting pitcher if they're going to take that offense and take the next step. I mean, they needed help, and they got some help. Maybe they gave up too much, but I still like that their pitching got a whole lot better yesterday. It was better yesterday than it was the day before, that's for sure.
You got Barrios, you got Odorizzi, you have Homer Bailey, you have Rich Hill at some point join the rotation. Kenta Maeda now goes into their mix. What about from the Angels' perspective? We're still learning about that part of the deal that the Dodgers made, where they ship Jock Peterson. And now reportedly Ross Stripling is going over there. I love this for the Angels. And I understand that they're going to give up some prospect talent. But what they communicated to other teams all winter was, look, we're willing to dig into our farm system to help our team in 2020. And now Jock Peterson adds more depth to a lineup that's already added Anthony Rendon. We'll have Shohei Ohtani for the whole year. Of course, it's all built around Mike Trout. I like that, and I like the addition of Stripling for the rotation.
Yeah, I like what the Angels did. I mean, Jock Peterson hit 36 homers last year, and in this homer crazy game that we play today, that's extra value there. Now they can line up four guys in a row, if not more, who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And Joe Maddon is going to find a way to put that lineup together. Ross Stripling, if he ends up there, is an above average major league pitcher. The Angels are in trouble pitching wise. He will help a little bit. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but they're a better team with the deal they've made here. And that lineup is going to be formidable, especially if Jock Peterson has the kind of year he had last year.
I got three more for you. The Mets sale is apparently in trouble in that negotiated deal between the Wilpons and Steve Cohen, who would have become and may still become, if they can somehow revitalize this negotiation, would become the richest owner in baseball. I don't know exactly why this tentative deal blew up, Tim, but yesterday when news of this broke, I think first in the New York Post, I was talking with someone who has worked, who had worked at one point for a long time for the Mets, and he goes, this is the most Mets thing ever, that this would blow up at this point after having been agreed to. And some of the executives that I spoke with other teams today were saying, they can't imagine the Mets getting someone to be willing to pay a higher price than what Steve Cohen was willing to pay, which is why they wonder if the two sides eventually will come back together. But typical Mets dysfunction maybe is the headline.
Yeah, and I think the story got buried a little bit by the Mookie Betts trade, because I think you look at it, and I think the other thing that buries it a little bit is that he wasn't going to take over right away anyway. So people had a chance, Mets fans had a chance just to see how this was going to work. And now if it doesn't work at all, that's a really big story in New York if this thing completely blows up and there is no Steve Cohen to buy the club in a few years officially and take over. So that was not a good day for the Mets either yesterday, that's for sure.
The more that I talk with people around baseball as we move closer to the start of spring training, the more, Tim, I think that what we're going to see with the Houston Astros this year is unprecedented in terms of the backlash and the reaction, especially from fans that, I was covering Roberto Alomar when he went through the spitting incident. And in every ballpark after that, when he was he played as a road player, he was booed. We saw Barry Bonds get booed all the time. I think this is collectively what's going to happen with the Astros. And I'm not sure if they quite get it yet, the players, about how bad it might be potentially, because you haven't seen any of them come out individually and show the type of remorse that Clayton Kershaw was talking about last week when he was saying, you know what, it might behoove them to come out and say something and to apologize in some way. I actually think it would be a mistake for them to wait to do it as a group in spring training, because I think they're all going to look like a chain gang, when it would be better for them individually just to, if they have opportunity, to get in front of a camera and say, you know what, here's what happened from my perspective. I'm not going to talk about anybody else, but here's why I feel like I made a mistake. I think they need to do that as soon as possible, Tim.
Yeah, I think it should have been done by now. I think it's going to look orchestrated when the whole team gets together and the owner says, look, you guys have to say this now. We'll all say it together, unified front. I don't think that's going to work in this case, not with the way the media works today, not with our Twitter sensation that goes on every single day in this country. I think the best thing to do is just to come out and say, look, we did something wrong here. We embarrassed ourselves. We embarrassed the game. We hurt our organization. We stay in the game, and we feel terrible about this, but that should have already been done. I'm interested to see how they're going to handle this in spring training, but I think it's better individually than as a group.
And lastly, Pete Rose asked Commissioner Rob Manfred on Wednesday morning to remove his name from Major League Baseball's ineligible list, and potentially would be considered to be considered for induction in the Baseball Hall of Fame. This is based on a petition that was sent to the commissioner's office and obtained by ESPN. And Tim, when I saw this story this morning, I just shook my head, because I understand Pete Rose's arguments that, you know, after how the players were handled in the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal, I get it why you can make an argument that maybe his case is as egregious, and maybe he should be treated the same way as the Astros players. My God, Tim, he has been extended so many opportunities through the years to step forward and to put himself in the good graces of baseball. And at every step, it feels like he's done the wrong thing. He's had plenty of opportunities in my eyes. What about yours?
Yeah, I mean, his timing as a player was impeccable. His timing since through all of this has been terrible on every front. He was given a chance by Bud Selig, at least an outside chance, and he blew that one. Rob Manfred gave him a chance, and he blew that one also. So I understand what Pete is trying to say here, but I don't think these are comparable as many people think it is. He gambled on baseball, which is an enormous violation, and then he lied about it some more. And the commissioner, who is a lawyer, who sets down the law and says, look, this is what you got to do. And then when he didn't do what he was supposed to do, the commissioner said, all right, that's enough of that. I don't see this going anywhere for Pete Rose anytime soon.
All right. When are you headed to spring training?
I'm going on Saturday, and I'll be at the Red Sox on Sunday morning. Probably just going to be me there, but that's okay.
Yeah, the question is whether or not the Red Sox will have a manager by the time you arrive in camp. We're still waiting for that, Tim.
Right. We're still waiting for the punishment for the Red Sox. So I just say let's get it all out of the way this week and start fresh on Sunday or Monday of next week.
All right. Good to talk with you, Tim.
Thank you, Buster. See you.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
Hembo is Paul Imbakite. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. We haven't been able to confirm that. Hembo, good to talk with you. A lot of good baseball to talk about today. And before we get to some over-unders, an over-under draft that you and I are going to do, let's get your reaction to the Mookie Betts trade.
Well, the first thing I told Greeny this morning, Buster, when I arrived was, it's like clockwork. Once in every 100 years, the Red Sox make a stupid trade just to save their owner some money. 100 years ago, it was because Harry Frizzy wanted some money for his Broadway plays, right? Now, it's because John Henry wants to get back under the luxury tax threshold. Either way, it's a terrible excuse, Buster. And I can totally understand if you woke up this morning as a Red Sox fan incensed with the news. Even though we understand what they're doing, even though we understand the practical components of doing this, to me, it's a very difficult sell for the fan base for a variety of reasons. And ultimately, it seems to me that the Yankees really sort of strong-armed the Red Sox into doing this because they almost decided the Yankees got too good to have really any chance to compete this year. So they might as well ship Mookie Betts off for as much as they possibly could. And even though I think they should have done that in July rather than now, they chose to do it sooner rather than later.
So I'm going to break you down in several different fronts, okay? First off, if you were looking at it as a terrible trade, would you initially, as you talked about, you know, Red Sox ownership making a mistake, do you give them any credit for winning four titles in the last 16 years?
Of course I do, but in three of those four titles, Buster, they exceeded the luxury tax threshold. You know, so okay. Look, they've spent in the years in which they've done so. The Red Sox have won more than almost anybody. They just haven't been able to sort of maintain that consistency, which is sort of the bizarre nature of the Red Sox over the last 15 years.
Do you believe that Chaim Bloom, who's their heads are baseball ops now, is a thorough executive and spoke to every team and determined that this was the best possible trade?
I do. I think the mistake that Chaim Bloom made was choosing to make this decision now rather than July, because I'm not one who believes in punting seasons. The American League is really weak this year. The bottom of the American League is really thin, and there's definitely a scenario in which the Red Sox could get to 90 wins and make the playoffs because they can beat up on the Orioles and the Tigers and the Royals and the Mariners, and that's an opportunity that they should have given their team and a fan base that packs that stadium every single night, whether or not they're good or whether or not they're bad. I don't doubt that that's the most they could have gotten for Mookie Betts right now. You're not going to get any less for him, though, in July, because you trade him now, you trade him in July, he can affect exactly one pennant race, regardless of when you trade him.
Okay, I can tell I'm not going to move you off your stance on this trade, so we'll just move on and get to the over-unders. And I thought of a concept that I hope is interesting for folks. I was excited about it. I think you're excited about it, Hembo, and that is an over-under draft. Last month we got the first over-unders from Caesars that we use at ESPN, and these are for the individual teams. And so my concept is, we'll draft the best, most attractive over-unders in terms of team win total, you and I taking turns. And I asked Taylor to flip a coin to determine whether it's you or I who gets the first pick. Taylor, how did that turn out?
That is a Buster first round.
What a stunning development that is. Here's the sake of transparency. We're in three different buildings right now.
So you're suggesting that this whole thing is rigged.
I think banged one trash can for heads and heads came up.
Oh my. All right. So I came up with my over under draft board this morning, which one I was going to go first. And I think I can sneak my second pick in. And the first pick I decided to lean on was a team that has more prominence. So for my first pick, the most attractive over-under that I saw on the board, I'm going to take the Minnesota Twins. According to Caesars, the over-under for them for 2020 is 92.5. This is a team, Hembo, that won 101 games last season. They won the American League Central. And this winter, they signed Josh Donaldson. Their offense, which was incredible last year, set a new record for home runs in a season, will be incredible again. There are questions about their starting pitching. that certainly I think has been augmented in recent weeks by various moves they've made. So that's my first pick. I would take the over on the Minnesota Twins on the 92.5. What do you think?
Fair enough. I like the over, although it wasn't terribly high on my board. In fact, until they signed Josh Donaldson, I favored the Indians over the Twins. So they obviously recognized that they had still had a little bit of a ways to go. And even though they won 101 games last year, I don't know how you could have watched them play in the American League Division Series and concluded anything other than the fact that they still need a lot of help. So the Josh Donaldson addition is huge, improves them defensively as well, which they really needed to do. And they've made some sort of minor pitching moves, which I think may make a considerable difference when you stack those on top of each other. It's hard to see any team other than them winning that division. It's a good pick.
Okay. What do you got for your pick?
My pick is the Diamondbacks. I'm taking the over.
Ah, dang it! Oh, so bummed.
That's tremendous.
They were at the top of my draft board, and I sent it. Taylor can vouch this. I sent it to him today, this morning, and I was like, I got Diamond, but I think Hembo might not take this one. Ah, man.
That
go ahead.
Absolutely tremendous. I'm taking the Diamondbacks over 84.5. This was an 85 win club.
Yes.
Last year, they owned the best record and run differential among all teams over the last two seasons that did not make the playoffs. Than either of them, and they've gotten a lot better. The additions of Madison Bumgarner and Starling Marte probably make a 5-win difference by themselves. This is a very well-run club from the top down. They do a really good job in the margins, the defense, the base running, all the rest of it. You add some top-end talent to a team whose division is sort of receding around them, other than the Dodgers, obviously. This is a 91 club with a really good chance to make the playoffs as a wild card team.
Dang it! Boy,
that's tremendous.
Good pick by you. They were at the top of my board. No, did Taylor back me up there, right?
Oh yeah, you were talking about second round value and you're lying in wait and Hembo caught you.
That's outstanding.
Oh man. Yep. So the Diamondbacks over under 84.5. Hembo goes over. I go way over too. We think there's great value in that. Okay. For my second round pick, I've got the Detroit Tigers with their over under 57.5. This is a team that last year went 47-114. And sorry, Taylor, I got to bring up your Orioles last year. You remember the initial over-under on them for last winter was 59.5 after they won, I think, 47 games the year before. The idea that the Tigers are going to be 11 games better than they were last year, I don't get that. I don't know why you'd put them at 57.5. So the Tigers at 57.5, I would take the under on that easy. What about you, Hembo?
I would take the under too, but it's a shaky number because they don't have to be good at all to get there. I mean, winning 58 games in a major league season is something that almost everyone does. And even though there's almost no talent on that roster and they're so depleted, it's such an extraordinarily low number that I'd have a really tough time putting my hard-earned money on it. I'd be more inclined to put my number on a team, say with an over-under of 100 to go over than I would be of a team to lose like 105 games. That's a tough putt because it just so rarely happens.
Okay, what's your second round pick?
My second round pick is the Cubs. I'm taking under 85.5. This is a club that won 84 games last season and essentially froze this offseason as best I can tell. They spent only $3.5 million in free agency. The entire starting rotation is over the age of 30. They don't possess the sort of swing and miss power stuff that you really need to win in today's game. And if indeed they end up trading Chris Bryant, it's another 2 or 3 wins off the board immediately. And when you consider that the Reds got a lot better, the Brewers I think are going to still be there to an extent, as will the Cardinals. I think this is a club that's going to be fighting to be 500, not fighting to go to the playoffs.
All right, let's go one more round. I am loaded up on American League Central because third round pick, I get the Indians. 86.5, I take the over. This is a team that won 93 games last year. They returned their rotation basically intact in terms of who was effective. Corey Kluber was on the team last year, but as you know, he really didn't pitch that much. They got Shane Bieber back. They got Mike Clevenger back. They plugged some holes in their everyday lineup. So I got the Indians going over 86.5. Who's your third round pick?
My third round pick, Buster, is going to be the Oakland Athletics. I'm going to go over the number 90. This team is going to win the American League West this season. They're not quite as talented top to bottom as the Astros, but they certainly have the top end talent to do it. If you look during the summers of the last two seasons, June on, they own the second best record in baseball behind only the Astros. You know I'm a huge fan of Ramon Laureano. You know I'm a huge fan of what they do in the infield, but perhaps most importantly, they have a phalanx of talented, young, cost-controlled pitchers really for the first time in 10 or 15 years. They've made the playoffs the last 2 years with an ugly sort of veteran group of pitchers. These guys are really talented and loaded, and in a division that I think is potentially there for the taking with some likely regression from the Astros with all the stuff surrounding them. I think the Athletics have a chance to win 100 games this season. They won 97 a year ago. I give them a chance to win 100.
Well, I'm depressed. You outdid me. I tried to sneak my number one pick past you, and you know what? You grabbed it.
You know, I'm surprised right, neither of us went with the Yankees, to be honest. We'll talk about that another time.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty. Got some good ones. Obviously, this trade provoked a lot of responses. Don't forget, you can tweet us, hashtag Bleacher Tweets, and I'll plug my own Twitter handle, at CT Schwenk on Twitter. Shameless plug. The Stadium Man, at Tari Haina on Twitter, says, with the family farm being safe again with Mookie going to L.A., has Buster ever been wrong on betting the farm?
Yeah, Taylor, I don't know if you know my background. I grew up in a dairy farm in Vermont. And so there are times when, you know, in talking about possible deals or things might happen, I've said, you know, I'll bet the family farm this is going to happen. Like last week when I did SportsCenter, I said, I bet the family farm Mookie Betts gets traded before spring training. And my guess was that he was going to go to the Dodgers. And I got to say, you know, just about every time I've done that, I've been right. So the family farm is safe. There was one time that I didn't do that. I wasn't right. I went back when Greeny, you know, he was doing a show with Mike Golic. I went on with them and I said to Greeny that I would bet the family farm that Bryce Harper would be traded before the trade deadline. And I was wrong. And then when I went back on with Greeny, he said, yeah, so what's up with that? And I said, well, you never took the bet. So I got away with it, betting the family Sneaky. Farm. The one time I was wrong, no one took me up on the bet.
I don't blame you for being a little bit underhanded there. I mean, the family farm, that's worth a lot, I'm sure. A lot of cows. Milk's valuable these days.
Got a good woodlot, you know, 50 acres on what I own. So absolutely.
Beautiful. All right, P.K. Steinberg, at P.K. Steinberg on Twitter. True or false, this deal was more about getting rid of David Price's contract than it was about Mookie Betts.
P.K., I think it was as much about getting rid of David Price's contractual obligation as it was about moving Mookie Betts. We talked last month about how when the Red Sox were communicating with teams, they were attaching David Price to Mookie Betts in a lot of the conversations.
Sanzare at Sanzare says, hey, Buster, did the Red Sox trade Mookie Betts to get the Dodgers as retribution for cheating during the 2018 World Series?
No, I think Sanzare, you probably mean is sort of like a payoff. Like, oh, sorry about that. We'll give you Mookie Betts. There's no chance that that happened.
At Slate 2130, this person asks, what's the chances of the Reds getting Francisco Lindor?
I think there's a chance this summer. They'll be in the conversation. You know, they had some conversations with the Indians about that. And I do think Francisco Lindor will be traded before the trade deadline. I don't know if I'm ready to bet the family farm on it, but I think that's going to happen before July 31st.
At Corey R underscore 12 asks, hey, Buster, with the Mets really Metsing up the sale of the team, does Major League Baseball need to force a sale on the Wilpons?
No, and there's no chance of that happening because the Wilpons are very closely aligned with the commissioner's office, with Major League Baseball. I think they have been under favored nation status. So there won't be any pressure from Major League Baseball.
Interesting. All right, last one here. Chris at BergFan004. In your opinion, what has been the most lopsided trade transaction of the offseason so far? He suggests Strasburg's enormous $245 million contract.
No, Taylor, I'm going to take you behind the scenes on this show. Unfortunately, and I didn't alert you, a lot of times I write my own notes into that.
Oh, gosh.
So I put in parentheses below because when I saw the question, Chris, in preparing my answer, I wrote, I thought that Strasburg's $245 million contract, a lot of the feedback I got from other teams was that they felt like that was a tremendous overpay by $75 million or so. The assumption when Strasburg got a new deal was they were going to tack on a couple of years. So other teams, and I know this for a fact, that folks within the Nationals organization were shocked that ownership gave him a deal as much as he got, $245 million.
That's not really like the Nationals. And just another question for my own curiosity here.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on Strasburg versus Rendon? Like, I think a lot of Nationals fans are okay with the Strasburg signing, but from my outside vantage point, I think I would have gone Rendon.
You can make an argument for that, but I think all along, I think Strasburg wanted to stay. You know, he made very clear after the World Series is over that he considered Washington home. Or on the other hand, you got the sense from talking with some of his teammates that Anthony was ready to go.
Got it. All right. That's it for Bleacher Tweets.
All right. My thanks today to Paul Hembekides, who stole my first round pick because I messed it up, and to Tim Kirchin and Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I will be here every day. Troy Farkas also waiting in the wings as well. So don't forget about him.
Absolutely. And it looks like that we're going to start our daily podcast on February 18th. So we're looking forward to that. Perhaps next week, depending on what happens with the Astros and some other stories around baseball, we'll jump on and have one at some point in the middle of next week. But for sure, we're going to be back on February 18th. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.